probably when you turn against the government, wherever of this world, you are in danger, is something obvious. When there is no freedom in that land, is dangerous.
Cyrus Rafi, better known as Pasha. He's a professional MMA fighter and originally from Iran. Sadly, because of his own safety, he had to flee the country and make his way through Turkey, Greece, France, finally coming into the UK. This is one crazy story. Be happy, never content, and make sure you are subscribing. Right, welcome guys back to the Stephen Sully Study. Got a really, really interesting guest in front of me. I was introduced to this man by Nathaniel Woods, who was a former guest of mine, a friend of mine, who is a UFC fighter. Now, I've had a lot of boxers on my podcast. I box myself, and I've had a lot of sports people on. And typically, when we're speaking to sports people, especially fighters, yeah, it's about the mindset. It's about training hard. It's about the sacrifice. It's about the determination. It's about the belief, etc. And quite clearly, you being an MMA fighter, there's going to be part of that conversation is going to surround that. But I want the audience to know that there's a deeper story behind you as an athlete and as a fighter. You had a quite a crazy journey up until this moment in time. So today's date is 25th of November, 2023, and it was only a few years ago that you were fleeing your own country to get over to here. So anyway, that was a long introduction. This is a man called Cyrus Rafi, but everyone knows him as Pasha. Welcome aboard the Stephen Sully Study, mate.
Yep, thank you so much. Thanks for having me in this special day. Yeah, thank you so much.
No problem. So, taking it back to the moment that I was reading your story on the Metro. There was an article that came out in 2022, I think September, roughly about a year ago.
Oh yeah.
And it was clear to see from the article that you've got a passion for combat sports, training, and being an athlete. And you actually represented your country, which was Iran, yeah, multiple times.
Yes.
Going abroad, in Denmark, you won gold. You know, you were doing, you know, you represented the country so many times. But the country that you loved and represented, it kind of feels that they slightly turned against you. So tell me about, you know, your combat days representing Iran, and tell me about some of your achievements, what you were doing, and how did it kind of suddenly start going a bit wrong for you?
Yeah. Okay, so I used to fight for Iran. No, I was the representative. 2014 in Philippines, 2015 in UAE, in Dubai, and again in Iran in one international championship. In Georgia, 2016, 2017 in Iraq, Kurdistan, so, and again in Denmark. So I used to fight for them I always raised their flag. So I was their representative. So all the achievements just went exactly for Iran and Iranian people, which I'm really proud of. But the thing is, simultaneously, I was looking after the woman athlete, so which is really important for me. So I used to teach them, coaching them how to defend. It was really important because it backs to when I was a child. So I had four sisters. Yeah, so I was seeing that because my father was a restricted man and religious man. So he never let my sisters and even my mother to just choose their way, their path. So they haven't had any freedom, and it's really norm in a lot of families. So they wasn't free to just go what and do what they want. I was seeing them, and it was really important to me. How can I help the women's society in future? Because as a child, I was the eyewitness of this. So it's type of violence, yeah? There is no freedom for them. So I was trying to get that level, but even I can learn and I can teach. So that made me think that I have to do something bigger than deeper than martial arts. So I started to get into it. So I remember even my father, in my first fight, I was maybe 7 years old. My father came there before my fight, gave me two bananas. Yeah. Said, go, I want out, you win. I said, okay, I try. So I went to the route on tatami. Then I lost, and it was really funny because I always beat up this guy in the gym, but that day wasn't my day. And I remember my father and even my mom, so they just left. They didn't wait for me, they left. So he was really restricted, I wanna just tell you, it was like that. A good man with a good heart, but restricted, religious. Yeah, it is what it is. So, so I remember exactly that day, it wasn't a good day for me. So after that, I was trying to get more skills and abilities. Want to, you know, help some people, especially the woman. I was seeing my sisters. So when I grew up, I just got into it. I remember I started with Taekwondo, then slowly kickboxing, Muay Thai, and mix wrestling training sometimes, grappling, and yeah, I became a professional MMA fighter. And some fights on the ground, because in Iran is prohibited, there is no professional federation, MMA professional federation, even not amateur one. Amateur just started maybe in a couple years, so before that there was nothing, so it wasn't allowed. Even if sometimes I remember when I wanted to fight, just the police came there and oof, stop us, arrested us. It was really, really hard to start to fight in MMA, you know, in the cage in Iran. It was really hard. Yeah. Wow. But as soon as the government noticed that I'm teaching and helping the women, so they just stopped me. They deprived me. They banned me from training, fighting, even coaching. Yeah, it was really hard situation. But as it you know, it was something that, it was something like more, something special for me. So I never gave up on it. So I always look after my students, my female students, because, you know, I was seeing that even not in Iran, everywhere that you see, the women are vulnerable. So we have to look after them. They have really a strong soul, but they're vulnerable. They have to be looked after. So I wanted to just teach them more, because it's not only, you know, sometimes maybe you see some woman with bruising eyes, with bruising body, so, or they got beat up with family or whatever, is part of violence that they are receiving from society and, you know, the people or the family or whatever. So it's part of that. That, so I couldn't have a role on that, but I could help people who help women in the physical part. They be, you know, if they be strong, it's about, you know, it's not about you know something, go and use it in the street. No, it's better to know, you know, as like I remember some beautiful quotation. One student says to his master, he says, you are talking about peace, but you are teaching me the, you know, martial arts and aggressive, you know, violence. So how do you reconcile these two together? The master replied, I want you be a warrior in the garden, not a gardener in the war. So it's better to know. That's better to know. Yeah, so just it's good to, it's about the discipline, it's about the mental health, it's about the a comfortable, you know, is all of them is useful and helpful. That's why, and a lot of students, even here, I just kept doing that. You know, I was helping the LGBTQ group in south of London, east of London. So I was helping the women community. I was really helping them, because it's something that I always have to keep doing that. Even in future, I feel, even now I'm doing that, even online, sometimes I helping some woman. Yeah. So it was all, but unfortunately, you know, some people, some government is a bit, because of the restricted of religion or whatever, yeah, it's illegal.
So in Iran, because of your sisters and the way you saw women in society in Iran, you felt it was your duty, obligation, and a life calling.
Exactly.
To protect the females by giving them some self-defense training and skills.
Exactly.
Which I think is great. Playing slightly devil's advocate, though, So, as a citizen from Iran, you obviously probably knew some of the risk, and also knew that it was, dare I say, was it illegal to train women?
Yeah. It's 100%
illegal. So despite the risks, your calling was so strong that you had to go and do it. I read an article when you went to Denmark, you got gold, and you done really well for Iran, and you actually held up the flag, and you know, you were very proud of your achievement, also proud to represent your country. But the moment you got back, they had banned you because of training women.
Yeah.
Did you ever get like attacked for you know, looking after the women and training them?
Yeah, you know, to be honest, when I came back from Denmark, even I had a good suggestion that even the boss of federation said, stay here. So they offered me two gyms, one with rings, one the other one with cage, with 18 students, I remember. He said, you will get paid, just stay here, stay with us. I said, my family is living in Iran, so, you know, my mother, my sisters, I have to go back. They are waiting for me. I can't leave them alone. So even I'm having a lot of students, I'm having a lot of, you know, women or some people around me. So it's my portion, I have to come back. So I just refused them. I just got back to my country. So when I got back there, I saw that they just broadcasted the news. Yes, this guy went, won, and this and that, as an Iranian people. So they picked your fruits and they cut off your roots. You know what I mean? You are like a tree, yeah? They get everything, your achievement, but they cut off your root. So after a while, I said, so what's wrong with that? Why did you stop me? Yeah, because of this, because of that. Because of you were coaching the woman. I said, okay. So I just shared one protesting clip in my social media. So it became really viral. Even the Persian BBC broadcasted in their channel. So a lot of people came and, you know, it became really viral. Yeah, after a while.
Because of your post.
Because of my post, yeah. I shared in my Instagram, yeah. I just criticized the government. What was that? The federation. That was the reason. I was looking for a reason because I was trying in the park, yeah. So after a while, one night I was just walking in the street, normal one. So it was good weather. I was walking and just I've been shot through two unknown gunmen.
So two random gunmen shot at you.
Yeah.
Did you get hit?
No. Because I heard them as soon as they stopped the car. So I heard the gun is out. Then I just saw them. So what happened? Because I used to try one headphone, one hands-free. So one of them wasn't working properly, you know, that's why they didn't know that about it. So, but I was hearing the people as well. And my left hand, I just heard something. So I just ran away. It was like hill with a bush. And I just went there and just fell down. They thought maybe, yeah, they caught me out. But nothing happened. Then I called to the police, came the ambulance. So I was really, really shocked. So
was you frightened?
Sorry?
Frightened?
Yes, yeah, yes. It was, let me tell you about it. It was a good question. I'll get back to you now. So after what I reported to the police, to the court, no action were taken, nothing. They said, we don't know. We check the camera. We don't know. Anyway, so I was involving with PTSD because of that happens for about 18 months when I got here exactly. Because the PTSD was like that. As soon as you are involving with that, you are surviving. So you don't feel the PTSD, trauma. But as soon as you come in somewhere that is safe, it's just started. So it exactly happened to me as soon as I got it. Even I fell down from bike a couple of times because I saw, oh, the white car. As soon as I seen the white car, oh, you know, it was crazy. So I received a lot of treatment. I got much better and I faced with reality. So I got much better than that. Yeah. So it was really, really horrible. And even So another flashback about my friend that we will talk about it. Yeah, it wasn't a good time, you know. It's really horrible that something happens to you then. You know, the voice still banging in my brain sometimes. Mm. Yeah. Wow. It was really hard, yeah.
So that happened. There was a story that I picked up from the main Metro article, and then also reading other things, that a friend or a partner of yours who was also a fighter.
He was wrestling.
Okay. He went to the protests.
Yes. Yeah. We were together. Yeah. That day.
You were together. Yeah. And he ended up being caught by maybe the police. Yeah. And then he ended up being murdered.
Yeah. So.
Can you walk me through it, if you don't mind?
Yeah. Yeah. I should talk about it. People should know, you know, wherever I go, whatever chance I find, I have to talk about this guy.
Okay.
Because he was really young. He was 27 years old, you know. So we participated in same demonstration. Yeah, it was in the same day. It was 2018, August. So I remember they caught me out with tear gas. But Navid just ran away. After a while, they sent me to the hospital because my head, my body was bleeding. It was really dangerous. So they said maybe he's gonna be kidnapped. Then after that, they moved me to the detention center. They said this guy probably will die, so let's send him out. So it's not on us anymore. So I signed one undertaken letter or something. So no more. We want to see in, participate in demonstration. This, that. So okay. So we just signed it out, and I just came out. I went home. I was maybe 3-4 months. I couldn't walk because all my body was broken. My head, my body, my face. So after a while, I heard that they caught Navid, my friend. So they accused him to murder one official government. And despite the global screaming and protest, he was killed for nothing, you know, without any solid evidence, without anything. If someone offer you, okay, it is evidence and everything is, you know, everything is clear, so you don't get sad and you say, okay, he killed and now he's me. However, there was still a way, but they killed him. No one knows why. There is no solid evidence against him. I'm telling you. Even if when I talk with some friends, even they are here, even they never seen him in their real life. They just heard of him because his news became really viral. He was, you know, he was a champion, good wrestler.
He was a wrestler. Yeah.
He was a good wrestler. Yeah. So
is that how you knew him?
Yeah. Because we used to train together sometimes. Yeah. So we knew each other because our grappling venue was exactly close in. I mean, they were in the same complex, but their venue was exactly by our venue, you know. So I used to go there and say hello to guys. Yeah. But anyway, he's been killed now. So, yeah, it's really sad story. People still think when I talk about, you know, when I talk about it, I start flashing back, but it's better, you know. I try to suffer this situation, but I talk about him always, whenever I find a chance. Mm. Yeah.
What was his name?
Navid Afkari.
Navid, okay. So I read that very, very sad story about Navid losing his life, and I even heard or read that they were trying to give him a pardon. Even Donald Trump
yes
tried to
yes. is.
Step in and basically assist him, because clearly we could see he was being wrongly accused of a murder that he didn't commit. And then shortly after he was executed.
Yeah.
Can I ask, like, how did they execute him?
Because they don't care about anyone. So is
how did they do it?
They do it. They just hang them.
Hang him.
Hang them.
What, in public?
It was supposed to do it in the public, but we just heard that they did it in the jail.
Wow.
Yeah, it was supposed to do it. They were supposed to do it twice, you know, twice hanging. So they just hang you, and after a while you are dying, beating you down, give you water again. Look how horrible it is.
So it's torture.
Yes, it's torture.
And they tortured him.
Exactly. And then they killed him. You know, wow. They said twice. It was supposed to be twice, but no one knows how many times it happened.
Wow. You know. Have you spoken to his family since?
No.
No.
I can't.
No. So, obviously, that's a...
And their brother are in trouble as well.
Their brothers.
Just a couple... this year, they caught his sisters. His sister. His sister was in the jail. She was in prison.
Wow.
Yeah, for a while.
She out now?
Yeah, then they let her go after their family went. Said, we don't want what you did with our son, do it with our daughter. Then they just let her go. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were attacked yourself. You've lost your friend.
Yeah.
You've been banned from training. You've been banned from going into gyms. You've been restricted doing the thing that you love. When was it the moment you thought, me and my, you know, I think your wife at the time, when did you just decide to flee Iran and go to, I think, Turkey, then eventually over to Greece?
Yeah, so it was 2019. It was January 2019. So
not long ago.
Yeah, no, I just ran away. I just got one fake passport from across the border.
How'd you get a fake passport?
Some people in there, you know, I just asked friends, because I knew some people that did it, but I never cared about what I heard. So when you are in danger, you will find a way.
Yeah.
You know.
Why would you need a fake passport? Didn't you have...
Because I had my passport, because if someone, you know, near the border would have caught me, I was done. I didn't like to get into trouble, more trouble, yeah. So it was dangerous. It was really dangerous for me. So I just got a fake passport. I crossed the border to Turkey. So after a while from Turkey, I just tried 11 times to cross the Turkey border of Turkey to Greece, 11 times.
Why 11 times?
Because, I passed the border, I crossed the border, then police catch you, again send you back. You have to try it again. I remember once it was snowing. So we went to there is one city called Edirne. So I crossed there. So one friend showed me, look, there is, because there are some smugglers always. So the smuggler said, he you know, we became friends, said, okay, I respect you, I want to help you, just run away. Just go there, find there is one way there, you can cross there then. Exactly follow the railway, you will go to the Alexandropolis city. So there is UN there, so they can't send you back. So I tried, so in the middle of the way, my power bank, my battery, everything was gone, because I was trying to get there, you know, to get in there. So sometimes you have to, because it was water, it was really hard. So what I did, snowing started, and so I couldn't do anything else. I remember I gave the birds, I feed them some bread. After a while, I went and I again took them and eat it, because I was really dying. Yeah. So anyway, I went in the main road. I just went to the station. I got a ticket. I said, yeah, I want to go to that, because I wanted police to catch me, whatever. And I wanted them to arrest me. At least, you know, I could still breath and I could be still alive. So I went there, police said, okay, what you did? I said, I'm trying to go Alexandropolis. He said, you are a refugee? I said, yes, I'm trying. He said, okay. They took me to the detention and again sent me back. So anyway, 11 times, the finally, we took the boats and from the sea, it was 5 hours on the sea. Then we got to the Samos Island. From Samos Island, then we went there, and so I just lived there for 1 year ish. Then later I moved to the Athen.
Guys, I wanted to hop on here to once again thank the sponsors of this week's podcast, iSecure Vehicles. When we were searching around for sponsors for the channel, we honestly wanted to get a brand, a company that would give massive amount of value to our audience, and that is definitely iSecure Vehicles. They have a wide range of products which are designed to keep your vehicle, your asset, safe and secure. Some of those products are dash cameras, undetected immobilizers, and car tracking systems. Head over to iSecure to look at their products and make sure you say that the Stephen Sully Study podcast sent you there. So when you was on the boat from Turkey over to Greece,
yeah,
how many of you were in that boat?
So in fact, to tell you something that, because we will talk about it. So because my wife came there as well. Yeah. My wife, the girl that I used to live with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she came there. So we were together. And we were more than 26 people in one boat.
Wow.
Yeah, 26.
And did everyone make it?
It was hard. It was almost going to, yeah, to death. But because there was no other choice, you know. Yeah, so it was hard, but we got into the island.
So when you set off in the boat, was it strategized? Was it really planned as far as you would leave at a certain time? There would be a certain path you would go down. Was there a certain kind of method to it all? Or was it just hope and pray? Let's just go.
No. It was just hoping.
Hoping and praying.
There is no rules on the sea. Sea doesn't know any rules, any discipline, you know, anything. Just jump. You know, observe, just feed you, just, you know, eat you. It's really brutal. So we just were hoping that we will be alive, and we were praying. That's it. Nothing else.
And what type of boat was it? Was it like a large, almost inflatable dinghy, or like we see on TV now, where people are coming across, or was it on like a proper like motorboat?
No. It was what exactly you are seeing that.
Wow. It was, yeah. And there was young children on there.
Yeah.
Some babies.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
There must have been people really upset.
Yes. There were a lot of women, a lot of young people, children. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So when you arrived in Turkey, when you arrived in Greece, you end up becoming a refugee there, yeah. And you went into a refugee, let's call it camp.
Yeah.
And what I read is because you were a refugee, you wasn't allowed to go and train in the gyms.
Yes.
So to keep yourself fit, healthy and dedicated to your craft,
yeah,
which was combat sport, fighting,
yeah,
you done running every single day on the beach, which is very hard. You found 3 tires, tied them to a tree, and you was using it as a punch bag.
Yeah.
Your knuckles, your hands were getting damaged. So then you discovered, then you just decided to put cloth around your knuckles and use them as boxing gloves almost. Yeah. Is that quite accurate?
Yes, it's accurate, yeah. I have some video of this training as well. Yeah, I remember we were living in the tent, not in the camp, you know. The name was camp, but there was no house, nothing. In the rain, in the, you know, I remember it was snake in there, it was rat, in, you know, it was crazy. There was no hygiene. There was really, really bad situation. It's like 100 years ago, people, even not 100 years ago. So it was really bad situation. And I was responsible to myself, to my people, to people who were waiting for me. Okay, what's happening for this guy now? Because they knew me as a lot of people, whoever I think fight for justice is hero, you know, in my eyes. So it's not important that how big it is. Even if someone just write one sentence, but is fighting for justice and for freedom, is respected. So yeah, people were waiting for me that, okay, what's happening to this guy? So yeah, I found 3-4 tires. I just hang to the trees, connected together, and I started training, yeah, punching. And I remember 3-4 times I twisted my ankle. Yeah, it wasn't good. Yeah, so every day running around the sea, go and back, go and back. And everyone was laughing at me. What the fuck are you doing, man? What you do? Are you crazy? So what's happening for you? Everyone is thinking to find a way that just go away, go just run away. So what are you doing? Why are you keep training that hard? You know, fitness, push-ups, you know, and then, I don't know, whatever you think, you know, abs, whatever. Why? What's the reason? I said, I know the beauty of season, next season of my life, because I know the offer. So I exactly did it. I made it. I mean, I never gave up. Never. That time, never. I said, I have to make it.
Clearly, when you're going for adversity, so your country's turned on you, you've been beaten up, you've actually been, two masked men have tried to execute you. The police didn't want to know. Your friend was basically taken by the government and murdered. You had to flee your country. You went through all this turmoil to try and get from Turkey over to Greece. But yet, there is an element of your mindset which is still remaining really, really positive. And what reflects that is you're still training, keeping yourself fit, exercise. How did you remain so focused and positive, Pasha?
It's something, you know, it becomes your natural. When you have a goal, you go and catch it. When you want something, you have to earn it. So never chance comes to you. You have to be creative. You have to stay positive. There was no choice. So Russian says, I don't know if the pronunciation is correct or not. Najit Samrayat Paslitni. The last thing will be die is hope. So my hope never dead. That's why I always put it in the end of thing. You know, the last element will be die is hope. So I always was thinking of my friends and family and my people. You know, I was thinking of the, maybe I can make this world somewhere better than what really is. You know, maybe it can be more beautiful with my presence, because everyone has his, you know, everyone has a responsibility to this world, to the people. So I was thinking of that. Maybe I can empower some vulnerable people, you know. As you see, I always trying to get into the, you know, helping the LGBTQ, you know, group or women or girls, even online, I'm trying to help them. So yeah, what exactly may always is keeping me positive and still is thinking of my friend's goal, thinking of people that were fighting for freedom, for justice. You know, someday this world will be better place, I'm sure. If Pasha can do his job properly, so everyone, if Steve do his job properly, if everyone do his job, you know, it's a bit hard, but it's not impossible.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. So when you was in that refugee camp, or, you know, or the situation you just described with rats and snakes, and it was, you know, it wasn't a pleasant place to be, did you always feel that you wanted to end up in the UK and kind of start your life here?
No, I never planned for future, okay, where I'm going, yeah. But I was thinking, where I can be more productive, where I can be, I can bring out better than what people are, you know. So I was thinking, you know, is potentially UK is the best place, I think, so far for me, that they know, they look after you, that if you're having skills and abilities, they respect it and they look after you. You know, you can show your skills and abilities and they will respect it and they will look after you and you can grow up, you know. So I could help a lot of people. As you say, it was, I remember when I got in UK, it was 17 October 2020. So exactly 7th of December, it was tire number 3, it was pandemic. I started training, but they gave me the key, if you want to train, go in the gym. And they really trusted me, and it was really good for me. They said, go in the gym and start training, that's absolutely fine. So it was really good. I went there, I started training, until the pandemic just stopped, and I started coaching and helping the community project in London, which I was their MMA head coach in between 12, the youth between 12 to 18. And for free, we were coaching, we were teaching them martial arts, you know, to be better about the discipline, you know, about the morality, not only, you know, want to teach them, yeah, you have to do. No, as I told you, they should know something, but they keep it as they confident. You know, it martial arts brings you something better than you. You know, it's that's why. And even a lot of things. I was helping the I was MMA head coach of Ultra MMA. Even the I used to teach them for free 8 weeks. Then they sold the ticket to family and friend. They came support them, and all the proceeds went for the cancer research.
So
I'm happy with that, because it was the place that I could be more productive than ever.
Yeah.
But in my country, they stopped me. They didn't let me to grow up. They didn't let me teach people. They didn't let me to be who I am.
Yeah. Going back to that moment when you was in the refugee camp in Greece, so you mentioned that the conditions weren't so good. Obviously, you've been over here for a little while now, and you know you've got a good sort of friendship group around you with Brad Pickett and Nathaniel, etc. And you're doing what you love.
They can't be. I can't say they are my friend. They are my family.
Yeah, family.
GB Top Team is family for me.
And you've got that group, you've got that family, and you've got a good lifestyle over here, and now you can start really building on that. But when you was in that camp, what was going through your mind? It must have been like, I've got to survive here, this is just about survival. What was going through your mind when you was in that refugee camp?
A lot of things, you know. I always was talking with myself, and whoever said, okay, what's wrong with you? I used to say, it's been a while, I've been running around like a headless chicken with a lot of things going in my mind because I didn't know how to sort it. No, it was really hard to struggling with them, it was really struggling for surviving. It was really hard situation. Sometimes I was thinking, if you remember, there is one movie about Bruce Lee. You know, Bruce Lee put the nunchaku around his neck and sit down and close his eyes and think, and you know, everything is like peaceful and calm. He doesn't give up. He's waiting for a chance and opportunity. As soon as chance comes up, he starts again using the nunchaku. So my skills and abilities, whatever I have, was like my nunchaku. I just hang it around my neck. I just kept what I have to do in. So I started my training or keeping fit, but I never gave up. So I was thinking that there is one good day which comes up, you know, our son will raise up. So it's life always, you know, I call this ups and down squat, because everyone has ups and downs. Everyone, whoever you talk with, say, we have a lot going on. So it's something, not something, it's only for me. No, for everyone, but with a deeper story, with a deeper background. Yeah, that's it. I always was thinking of my friend's goals, that, for example, Navid's goal, what was Navid thinking about the justice, yeah, about the justice, about the, yeah, not all the people in Iran are bad people or corrupted. Even my problem, one of my problems with government was because I just exposed their corruption, yeah, their financial corruption with Federation. Then they turn against me. In fact, my problem was exactly the Federation. The Federation, the representative of Iran Federation in our province where I used to live. Wow. Yeah, so I was thinking of my friend's goal, of people that they are fighting for justice, for freedom. So I couldn't. It wasn't only me, it was a population, even 10 people. So it was on me. I should do that.
Mm. From Greece, what was the next couple of journeys that you had to make in order to get to the UK? What happened after you left that refugee camp in Greece, and why did you leave the refugee camp in Greece?
Yeah, so in Athens, in the Samos, the situation was really mad. So I should have done it. So what I did, we had three papers with a red stamp on it, which means we're not allowed to make a travel, through the Greece. So we removed it. One of my friends helped me to remove. I don't know how. So he did it. He helped me. He said, "Go and good luck." I said, "Okay." Everyone was trying from the boat, from the big boat, you get the ticket. But I tried from the airport. I went there. I showed them I had my ticket, showed the girl. She looked at my three papers. So, okay, you can go sit in there. It was like a miracle. It was impossible almost. I went to sit in the
On the plane?
I sit in the Athens, in Athens, in Greece, but cap no more Samos. So Athens had more potential for me, yeah? Then I got into the gym, I started training. Yeah, I started training there. It was really good in Zografo. Yeah, my friend he was really good guy. His name is Panos. Yeah.
So you went from. So where was you in Greece when you first got there?
So when I got to the Athens.
Okay.
Yeah, in Athens after maybe 3-4 months, I left again to the France, again illegally. How with the lorry, you know, the
lorry.
So yeah.
When you went from Turkey to Greece on the boat,
yeah,
you was in what? So whereabouts in Greece were you?
Samos.
Okay.
Samos Island.
And then you got to the airport with artificial papers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you got on a plane.
Yeah.
Landed to Athens.
Yeah.
And you were there for 3 or 4 months, started training.
Yeah.
And then you got on a lorry.
Yeah.
How did you get onto a lorry to get to France?
So we just hide it in between the. Their stuff, you know, it was.
Did the lorry know that you were in there?
Yeah. They knew everything.
How much did you pay them?
So we paid, I can't remember exactly. It was 3 years ago. Yeah, it was 2 years ago. Yeah, 2-3 years ago. I think 30,000 euro. Yeah, I think 30,000 euro. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, for every person.
Yeah. And how many people were in that lorry?
I know only about, we were two people, maybe more, but we didn't see anyone. We just jumped. We knew that. So the location that we were supposed to be dropped, it was near the Calais. So they took us there and say, okay, jump.
Wow.
Jump down. We went to the jungle, to forest in Calais, and wow. Went get ready for next boat
to the UK.
To the UK.
So the lorry that went to France, who told you about the lorry and how did you get in communication with the
person?
Because
you know there are always, it was a smuggler.
Okay.
I have no idea, to be honest.
So smuggler as in human smuggling and also drugs?
I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah.
So you got to Cali.
Yeah.
And then there was a boat. And what type of boat was it? Was it similar to what you had?
Again, similar. Yeah.
Very similar.
Even smaller.
And there was many people on there.
Smaller with 15 people.
15.
But smaller, really smaller.
And how long did it take you?
I think six hours.
On the boat?
Because it was, it wasn't, yeah, it was an event, you know. It was
rocky.
Windy, yeah, it was crazy.
And many young people in there?
Yeah. Children? All of us. No, not children with us, no.
No. Just women?
Just women, men.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you got into the UK. When did you actually set foot onto the UK soil for the first time?
The first time. It was 18th of October, 17th and 18th of October.
2020. In the year of COVID.
In exactly Tier 3, yeah.
Wow.
It was Tier 3, yeah.
Wow. So the moment you landed here, what was your first kind of decision and what was your first action? What did you do?
Look for a gym. Yeah, I remember I went to one gym. I said, listen, I'm just asylum seeker. I can't afford, but I'm a good cleaner. Let me train here. When there is no one here, I go on the punching bag. After 1 hour, I clean all the gym, even for 5 hours, because it was a huge gym. I don't want to mention the name because they are my friend. Anyway, they didn't let me. Said, oh no, now at the moment, the business is a stop, this, that. Yeah, so it was like that. But I talked with a couple more gyms. I went there, because I had a bike every day. Google Map, this gym. Yeah, some of them were closed really, some of them was, yeah. Then finally I got into the other gym and I started training there.
Wow.
Yeah.
The it's just a crazy story. So are you a citizen now in the UK?
Yeah.
You are?
But I'm not British. Yeah, but I'm having the protection, the international protection.
Okay, yeah. Because have you got international protection? Because the Iranian government could ask for you to come back, extradite you, and maybe put you in jail because
I was some of protesters. When you are turning against the government, wherever of this world, you are in danger. Is something obvious when there is no freedom in that land is dangerous. So which means you will be in danger. So what happened to my friend just made me crazy, made me thinking that, And however, when he was executed, I wasn't in Iran because I had my own problem with government. You know, I had my own issues with them because it could put me in the really, really, you know, bad situation maybe.
Yeah.
It was really, really dangerous. That's why I had to leave. I had to flee. That's why.
What about your parents? Are they still in Iran?
They're still in Iran. They were under some pressure of government as well.
Protection of government?
No, some pressure.
Pressure?
Yeah.
Still today?
Not these days. They did continue until last year. They always was looking for me in my house, in our house, the parents' house.
Are you speaking to your family?
Yeah, sometimes, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
And you must miss them.
Yeah, of course. It's been 6 years, five, 6 years.
Are you ever going to see them again?
I can't go back to Iran because last time I wanted to meet them, it was uprising. If you remember, they killed one girl for hijab, Mahsa Amini.
Right.
And Iran started uprising, demonstration against government. So they just closed the border. Or they say, if you want to go out, it's hard to get back in. So just my family said, okay.
And you can't bring them over to the UK?
I can't invite them because I'm on the asylum seeker. I have my residence permit, but I can't invite anyone here.
Yeah. So you got your mum, dad?
Yeah, I'm from a large family, four sisters and two more brothers.
And they're all over in Iran, and you haven't seen them for 6 years. Have you spoke to all of them on the phone?
No. Sometimes I speak with them because I don't like to get them into trouble. So yeah.
Oh, because if they were speaking
I'm
to
cautious,
you,
I'm cautious. Just I'm cautious. Yeah, maybe nothing happens, but maybe happens.
Because if your mum or dad were speaking to you on the phone and the authorities knew, they punish them.
Maybe they just annoyed them. Oh, so tell me what. Because they knew that where I am, they still was going there and checking our house. Yeah, for nothing. Yeah.
Well, just to cause just to annoy discomfort.
Them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just bothering them.
That must, when you do speak to them on the phone, that must really, really be hard for you and painful.
Yeah, my mum always crying. Yeah.
Oh man, it's horrible to hear. Yeah. A side topic which I found quite interesting, fascinating, was about your wife.
Yeah.
So 2018, I think you got married?
It was 2016 I got married. Yeah.
And then fast forward the clocks, did she come over to the UK with you?
Yeah. So, in fact, we got married.
You got married?
16, yeah. Okay.
And it was her brother that forced her to get married to you.
Yeah.
And at the time, I guess you just saw it as tradition, you know, getting married to a lady.
Exactly, yeah.
And everything was kind of normal.
I knew his brother. That's why I talked with him. I said, you know, I talk your sister. I like your sister. So if you think I'm a good person, you're like, no one better than you. So
is arranged marriages a common thing in Iran?
Sometimes it depends. So when I know, but it's more traditional.
Okay.
More. So before it used to be, but now I think it's a bit
lesser. Okay.
So I talked to her and with her brother as well. So they said, okay, that's fine. So, and I didn't know what's going on. So he just forced his sister that you have to get married.
You knew her brother, good friends with him.
Yeah.
You clearly found her attractive, liked her like a friend, but obviously more than that.
Yeah.
And then when he persuaded her to get married to you, you must have been happy, but was there anything unusual about the relationship at the start? Like, because she was being forced into a marriage, did she act like a bit disgruntled, or was she completely fine?
No. She wasn't fine, to be honest. She wasn't fine. But I thought maybe she still isn't trusting me. So I said maybe she needs more time. Yeah. I tried to show myself better than before. So okay, I will put more time in it. And I did, but after a while I noticed that she's homosexual. So
she's a lesbian, yeah?
She's lesbian, yeah. Because I noticed it was obvious. Then, but she always was scared of that you wanna tell me, yes, I'm not who you think. Because she was in danger. In Iran, it's really dangerous.
So if you're gay, lesbian, in Iran, it's illegal and you would be killed?
Yes. You will be killed. You will be go to the jail, you know, maybe forever. So your life will be in danger.
Wow.
Yes.
So, okay. So when you said it was quite obvious after a while that she was lesbian, I mean, is it because the way she was treating you, or is it when she was maybe in female company, she was a little bit more flirtatious towards these people?
Yeah. So to be honest, I just noticed that the relationship is not like, you know, it's not like normal relationships. So everyone knows that. And you know, she's not willing to have a relation, a deep relation. So after a while I noticed, and she's in touch with a girl, you know, they are together, and the way that she's talking to her, it wasn't like me, you know, that is talking to me. So I just noticed that, she can be lesbian.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just said, okay, I respect that. And I'm going to look after her because she's in danger in Iran.
Wow.
Yeah.
How did she feel confident in you after a while? Because she could have told you. And if you was a different type of person, you could have turned around to some sort of authority. I guess you was out the country at this point though, right?
Yeah.
So you're not in Iran. But you could have turned around somebody else and could have got in trouble with the authorities maybe.
Exactly.
How did she have the confidence to tell you, Pasha?
She never told me.
She never told you?
No, she never told me. When she, you know, she, when she got in here, I just raised this question. Are you lesbian? She said, yes. But here, nothing, Maka, nothing. Okay. She said, nothing. But I just noticed and respected that. I never asked her, because what was the point? Because she was feeling really stressed. Why should I make her stressful?
Mm.
I just let her go and say, okay, just do whatever you want. And even I didn't have any problem with she was, you know, whatever. She was going, sometimes used to go and meet her friend, and her friend came there sometimes. So I just let her go. I said, okay, do whatever you want, whatever you like. Yeah, it was like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you're still in, so you were married though. I take it you got divorced?
Yeah, not really, no. Not yet. And now, to be honest, now we are just doing from Iran. Now I just recently started to say, okay, so what's the point? Because maybe she want to get married, maybe I want to get married. I don't know.
Yeah.
No one knows in future. Yeah.
Okay. And you're still in communication with her?
Yeah, we are a good friend. So yeah, we are a good friend, and she knows that. She's really grateful girl. She knows that I really appreciate you, that you helped me. Because, yeah.
Well, where does she live now?
In Birmingham.
Birmingham? Mm. Why did she go to Birmingham?
Yeah,
and
because,
why
her girlfriend is living there.
Okay, understood. Okay, fair enough.
Her partner is
living. Yeah, okay, cool. So, okay, so since you've come over to the UK, you've had two MMA fights.
Yeah.
You've had two Brazilian jiu-jitsu fights, which is grappling.
Yeah, grappling, yeah.
Are you planning to do more fights?
To be honest, this year, two of my fights just canceled. The first one in Athens, my opponent pulled out his name by any reason. And the second one, it was in the June that the show canceled. So twice I dropped down my weight and again put on. So it's a bit hard. So after a while, I had my mom just had one brain stroke. So her jaw just turned away. So a lot of problem. So I just stopped training. So I'm working now to look after her, just keep her survive. And hopefully if I can find a sponsor, I will get, you know, the life expenses is really hard. Even my family, my mom, which is really important to me. I have to see her soon, hopefully. Now at the moment I'm just dedicating my life for them, but as soon as I find a sponsor, I will get back to the cage.
Yeah.
What exactly I want.
Yeah. Have you ever thought about trying to get onto the Bellator, UFC, anything like that?
I wish to.
Yeah.
I wish to.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know why I feel this conversation is really helpful? Not only is it interesting, and not only has it got lots of twists and turns, but in this country, Pasha.
Yeah.
Okay. There's obviously something called propaganda, and there's also something which is like media narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it happens, you know, with war, with refugees, with the poor, with the rich, with coronavirus, with taxes, with politicians. There's always a narrative.
Yeah.
And there has been in the last few years that this narrative about so many people coming into this country, and there's a population in the UK that are a little bit angry because they're saying, well, everyone's coming into our country and they're taking our resources. But equally, everyone's got their own story, right? And I think it's helpful for people to learn this story, because you're not just a person that just wanted to come into the country. You're actually in danger in Iran. You could have been murdered. They tried to murder you.
I was an immigrant. Yeah. I was a refugee.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that you share these type of stories, because it actually makes people realize that not everybody coming into the country is bad or good. Everyone's got their own different journeys and different stories. And I think it's just helpful to be to share these type of journeys with people, so so people understand.
Don't judge each other, just
you know.
Yeah, it's hard.
We're all humans at the end of the day.
Human being is human being. Yeah, yeah. It's really important to know. I think the most best religion in the world is humanity.
Yeah,
you know, just human rights. That's it. It's the most holy book. The most best holy book is just that's it.
Yeah,
yeah.
You strike me as a man that believes in positivity, hard work, belief, but also having a vision for the future and having goals.
Yeah.
So Pasha, what are your goals in the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now?
Whoever asked me this question, so I always try to keep my calendar for 1 year, you know, not more, not 5 years, not 10 years. Maybe some people do it. Maybe they are strong minded. But for me, I think it doesn't make sense for me that I want to put, you know, my calendar, or my plan, my schedule for 5 years ahead. That's better. Everything step by step. I have a goal, but I have to plan my next year. Yeah. So my goal is fighting in PFL, Bellator, whatever. So first, my first step is finding a sponsor, then getting to training, start training. Just keep quiet and just train. Yeah. Then slowly it will come through. So I think, you know, this world is crazy. Suddenly something happens, all your plan should be changed. No one knows. Maybe something happened, everyone should go, I don't know, move another place or whatever. Someone do some mistake and everyone has to pay for it. So I think I always plan my life so shortly. No, for now, I'm just focusing. I think the most important point in success is focusing, is concentration. If you don't concentrate on your goal, you can never achieve it. So for now, I just try to just keep my mom alive. That's it. It's my religion, is my goal, is everything for now. That's it. So next year, I'm trying to see how it goes, how it goes. Then if I can find a sponsor, I will get back to the cage. That's all and nothing else. Yeah, it's good if something good happens, if some chance comes up for some business, who knows, maybe I can establish my gym. Yeah, so who knows, but I can't plan now because I don't have, you know, I have a lot of hope. I have a good attempt at believing myself, which is the most important thing. But for now, I need to look after my family, and protect them. And as much as I can, even a couple of days ago, one girl came to me, I need you to help me with this, with that. And I really said, yeah, why not? We will find the time, I will do it. So I always try to do it, you know. And I don't care what nationality, what age, whatever, you know. More, it's really, you know, the women are really important, as I'm having 4 sisters. I'm having a mother always look after us, you know, in ups and downs, you know, through the tear and laughter. She always looked after us. Every mother is like that, not only my mom, you know. Mm. So it's better that everyone knows that they have to really respect their family, their mother, their sisters, that the father, the parents are no different. So family is important. And the other family is community in society. So they are my family as well. So if I can help them, if someone needs my help, you know, wherever, I'll be there for them. You know, I'll be there for them, 100%. Yeah.
I want to ask you one more question.
Yeah.
When I got into business for myself when I was younger, it was a sales company. And in sales, a lot of it is to do with your mind. And it's about positivity, focus, and, you know, always believing that you can better yourself each and every single day. And sometimes quotes or mantras are really useful because it's a reminder of how you need to live and how you need to think. So my mantra is this: be happy, never content.
Yeah.
Now I've got my own interpretation of what that means. If I were to ask yourself, Pasha, Rafi,
yeah,
what does be happy, never content mean to you?
It's a hard question, no? So could you please repeat that again? Yeah.
Be happy.
Yeah. And never.
Never content.
Yeah.
You know what it means? Content?
No, not content. And then the word.
You don't know the word?
The word, no.
Okay. Okay. So contentment is about, it really is subjective, that word. It means, never content means pushing on. So happy is a frame of mind.
Yeah.
Being happy in the moment. Contentment, or being not content, is being happy but also pushing on and trying to achieve your goals. That's what it means.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it's really correct, and it's really, I think, cover all the questions. It's a good answer for everyone. You know, I always say, while you are in your journey that you are achieving your goal, enjoy of the just path, enjoy of your life. But I mean, be chill, be peaceful, calm down, slow down. Yeah, don't go so, try to make everything happens quick. But while you are chill, but your mindset has be strong and ready for just catching any opportunity. You have to take any advantage of any opportunity as much as you can. But you have to be chill. You need a good soul. You need a peaceful minded that can achieve your goal. But simultaneously, you need to work. You have to do it. Otherwise, your dream will stay dreams. They never will happen. So brain activity together at the same time. You never can say, okay, only this one and that. No, all together. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Pasha, I thank you for your time.
Thank you so much.
Really enjoyed this conversation. What a journey. What a bloke. And remember to follow this man on Instagram. What is your handle?
My handle, Pasha Rafi, I can say.
Okay. Yeah. I'll put it into the show notes, and make sure you're subscribing to the channel, sharing the episodes, and be happy, never content. And thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.